Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Berthold Eric Schwartz, psychiatrist. I met him a few times in the early days, by the way. Seemed like a pretty nice guy.
Oh, yeah? What was he like?
You know, we're talking about brief conversations.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to assess the guy. But go on, please.
Well, you know, on that subject with Schwartz, he told a story in that book that I mentioned, UFO Dynamics, where a researcher had been visited by a, again, for lack of a better term, a man in black, but it was anything but a government agent. It was a man in a black suit. He comes inside. The guy had ghastly pale skin, and he removes his hat, and he also appears to be bald. And I'm thinking at this point, it must be Nick Redfern this guy met. But at that point, he says that the man starts to kind of speak to him about a UFO investigation that this man, an actual clinical practitioner himself, had been investigating. His family had not been at home at the time. He was there by himself. He says at one point, this MIB, I think, actually had been wearing gloves, too, and takes off the gloves, and at one point kind of, you know, moves his hand toward his face in a gesture and kind of rubs it against his lips, and it gives the impression, I think, that, you know, this guy, in addition to having this ghastly pale white skin, also was wearing lipstick. So he appeared to be wearing makeup of some kind.
Okay, it was really actor Tim Curry.
Yes. Again, I maintain it still could have possibly been Nick Redfern anyway. And I say that in love, by the way. Nick and I are good pals. And of course, Nick has written a lot about Men in Black and is no stranger to weird stories like, you know, these. So he's probably covered this one at some point. At one point, the MIB tells the observer to reach into his pocket. And he says, take the coin that's in your pocket and hold that in your hand. And as he pulls his hand out of his pocket with the coin, he's thinking, of course, you know, how does this guy know that I had this coin in my pocket? And he says that the coin begins to kind of spin very quickly and then kind of turns blue and fuzzy and vanishes. And the MIB tells him that this is what had happened to, if memory serves, it had been Barney Hill. He says that's what happened to him. That's why he died at such a young age. And it will happen to you, too, if you keep talking about this case. Now, you know, make of that story what you will, but quite obviously, if that is entirely true, it certainly is something beyond the normal kind of experience with people being met by someone claiming to be with the government and told, don't talk about the UFO that you saw. Yet again, that's a lot more, I think, in the sort of realm in which John Keel was dealing with this. And again, he had often said, I think he actually wrote this in The Eighth Tower, my chances of ever catching a flying saucer aren't very good, but these big black automobiles, I might be able to chase one of those down and run them off the road. And so he thought, you know, that's going to be my better option in terms of trying to get to the bottom of what this is all about. But he said he never did have the opportunity. He tried, but he never met the men in black.
Yeah, good luck trying to run them off the road in whatever those things that they're driving are. I mean, they look like a Cadillac in a lot of cases, or they're usually some sort of black official government-y type looking car. But even the one I saw back in the 70s, it was the classic black Cadillac with the big fins on the back. I mean, like I said, there was no road where this thing was going. So I don't know exactly what it was, but it wasn't government agents. I don't think that they have that kind of technology. I don't think we're dealing with MIB, like the movie type MID car that can go upside down and do all of the crazy things that it does. I just don't think that we have that. Where does that leave us? It kind of suggests that if you're a believer in alien visitation, that they are monitoring our studying of them and then mirroring it back to us with these elements thrown in that we put in there ourselves.
Yeah, there's definitely a very odd side to all of it from over the decades, you know, where, and some would actually extend that back even further, because one interpretation of the Men in Black, and yet again, Keel also acknowledged this. He did talk about this aspect of it, that the Men in Black are almost like a modern portrayal of the kinds of encounters with mysterious strangers or even the devil that we hear about from the ancient past, from antiquity even. And it's sort of a cultural, often with a more, you know, explicitly religious overtone in ages past, but it does seem to be a sort of cultural staple that even actually transcends different cultural manifestations over time. The stranger in black and the eerie visit that you get often at night. Now, there are also some stories that are really interesting that Keel told along those lines in terms of this being a phenomenon that's broader than just modern ufology, which, you know, I kind of have a problem with modern ufology, the idea that this all begins in 1947 anyway. I mean, for those who say the modern UFO era began in 1947, we have to remember, of course, and I'm certainly by no means the only commentator to point this out, many, many, many have, but let's not forget about the Foo Fighters during the Second World War. And in truth, there are decades of similar reports, although flying saucer or UFO, the modern terminology that we use didn't exist, but Charles Fort certainly wrote about aerial mysteries. We can go back to the 1890s airships. We can go back beyond that, and we can see astronomical observations of weird spindle-like objects that were occurring throughout the 19th century. We can go back to the 17 and the 1600s, even before that, and we see the signs, the portents, the prodigies that appeared in or over England and also other parts of Europe during that period. Vallée and Albeck have looked all the way back in time, and they've looked at, you know, expressions of religious visions and things along those lines as possible precursors, cultural precursors to modern UFO reports. And again, you really have to be careful making explicit connections between all the phenomena. But again, the point I'm making is it very well could be the case that this phenomena, if indeed it is not of earthly origin, or even perhaps if it is, it very well could be the case that it is something that predates the end of the Second World War. Rather than its arrival at that time, I think that technological innovations allow us to study and perceive it better, namely radar. In that line of thought, Keel actually received a report from a West Virginia newspaperman who said that back in the 1920s, I believe, he had been part of a posse that had been called up to investigate an airplane crash up in the mountains of West Virginia. And so he and the sheriff in that town follow the advice of the farmer who watched the plane, a strange-looking aircraft, he said, with no wings, go down in this portion of the forest. And so this gentleman, we'll call him Jeff, goes up there with the sheriff and this posse. And when they get up there, he says, we found the downed aircraft, but it was weird-looking. It was like a normal airplane, but much bigger and no wings, like just a fuselage. And it seemed to have windows along the side. And it was kind of parked in this clearing, and there were men running around. Some of them appeared to be wearing kind of silvery suits, and they looked kind of more like engineers, like they were working on the ship. And then there were other guys standing around next to them that were kind of directing things, and they were all wearing black suits. When the party arrives, one of the men shouts, "They're spies!" And they're carrying guns and everything, but one of the men in black suits, now keep in mind, up until this point, all these men had been speaking in some unrecognized foreign language. But the man approaches and he speaks in perfect English and says, "Listen, nobody's been injured. Everything's fine. We'll file a report with the sheriff's department later." And so they said, "Well, what could we do? Nobody was hurt. No laws had been broken, so we just left." But Jeff, at that time, said he'd found a little thingamajig laying on the ground, and he picks that up and puts it in his pocket, just a little something that he had found that seemed to have belonged to part of the aircraft but didn't look like essential to its operation. So he puts it in his pocket. And they hike out of the woods, and he goes home, and at about, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, he hears a banging on his door, and it wakes him up from his sleep, and he goes to the door, and he says there's a man standing there in an Air Force uniform. Now, this would have been, I guess, Army Air Force at that time. This, of course, predates the era of the U.S. Air Force. But this guy in this Army uniform introduces himself and says, "You've got something that belongs to us, and we want it back." And he says, "Oh," and he reaches into his pocket hanging by the door and says, "You mean this?" And he says the man snatches it and walks off into the dark and leaves. And he says there didn't appear to be any horse there that he had ridden in on or an automobile, anything like that. He just walks off into the darkness. But I'm thinking, how would this guy, claiming to be with our military, have known where I lived? I didn't give my address. I didn't give any information about where I lived. But this guy came looking for this thing that I retrieved from this weird wreckage up there in the West Virginia woods. Again, this predating by decades the arrival of the modern UFO, post-1947 UFO era as we know it today. Keel wrote about that also, and again, some of those weird outliers definitely seem to involve guys in black suits in association with UFOs, if yet again that story is to be believed.
You know, I don't even have any suit. If I wanted to go out and put on a black suit. Well, forget about it. Micah Hanks, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, you're in.
The Paracast.
As you know, neighbors, web hosting can be pretty cheap, but not all hosting is the same. DreamHost wins best of awards year after year. You get unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and even the low-cost plans put your sites on high-performance SSDs. Want to know more about what DreamHost has to offer? Go to technightowl.com/host. Once again, that's technightowl.com/host.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Are you ready for what's next? It's likely coming. More food shortages, power outages, grocery stores closed, social unrest. Ask yourself, do you have enough food and supplies on hand to last at least 30 days? Most Americans do not. But you can. Avoid the panic of the last-minute rush. Order your 4-week supply of emergency food today from MyPatriotSupply.com. Starvation or dependency on the government are your only alternatives. Avoid those and the pain of being unprepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. Build your emergency food supply with meals that last up to 25 years in storage, shipped discreetly to your door. Folks that know what's coming are using today to prepare. There's time for you to do the same. That's MyPatriotSupply.com, the original Patriot Preparedness Company. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Today, many of us are paying attention to our health, and what we eat plays an important role. But so often the water we drink is a mere afterthought when it should be a primary part of our daily nutrition. Real Water would like to change how you think about the water you drink and how it can play an important role in helping your body restore balance and reach its full potential. The key benefits of every bottle of Real Water are stabilized negative ions, balanced pH, detoxification, and it hydrates you like never before. And yes, it tastes great. Real Water is beyond alkalinity, and due to its proprietary process called E2 technology, it's the only drinking water on the market that can maintain a stable negative ionization, which means real science in every bottle. Order your Real Water today and take advantage of special pricing for this audience only by calling 1-855-REALWTR or visiting buyrealwaternow.com. That's 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com. Order now, 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com.
Both my legs were amputated due to an IED. It's when you start to try to get back into, like, an everyday life. I absolutely felt like I lost some of my purpose. There must be something more. When DAV came into my life, they gave me a new mission. I could still be a productive member of society, could still support a family.
The DAV gave him that sense of structure and purpose again to get his life back together.
Visit DAV.org to learn more about our mission.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So since we raised the question, the specter, I think of James Bond, the specter of black suits, I don't have a suit. I have a couple of sports jackets from years ago. The last time I wore one was at my son's bar mitzvah when he was 13 in 1999. That's it. It's still there, unworn. Micah, do you have a black suit?
Oh, yes, of course. I have to have one. You know, I have to wear one for my job.
You've got the definite MIB look going there, for sure.
Yeah.
It's a pretty standard, I guess, maybe look,
right,
you know, for professionals. You know, the black jacket, white shirt is pretty common. So, I mean, why shouldn't we see people out asking and interviewing people dressed that way? I mean, there's a whole range to all of this. But what gets me is the stuff that's just really weird that you just can't explain because there's no normal way to explain it.
I can certainly explain the black suit, though. They just won't let me into the lodge on Tuesdays unless I wear it.
Yeah, I was glad you mentioned the Grailian Report. Because I think it was last time we had you on the show, you were doing your podcast as part of the Grailian Report. Now you're doing your own show. And it says that you deal with a whole range of topics, not just UFOs, for example. So one of the things that you like to deal with is space exploration. So tell us sort of what your interest in that is. What's the latest that's been going on in space exploration?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm interested in really all kinds of subjects, but, you know, I feel right now, and I'm glad you asked about this, by the way, Randall, because, you know, yes, the Grailian Report was a blog I started many years ago, and the earliest iteration of any kind of radio show that I did, apart from actually working in radio, because keep in mind, I was actually a producer and occasional host of a number of different talk radio format shows when I worked for years as a professional producer for what is now iHeartMedia, Inc., but it was Clear Channel at that time. And so right here in Asheville, North Carolina, where I reside, I worked for our station cluster and was a producer across different platforms in a lot of different stations and studios. Eventually, they consolidated, put everything in one big building, and it was at the time that it was built a state-of-the-art facility with some of the top-end gear really that was being integrated in digital broadcast at that time. I say digital broadcast, even though it was terrestrial radio, did it the old fashioned way. We had a great big field with four towers. I mean, it was real radio, but again, we were moving away from using analog systems for that kind of broadcast and installing these state of the art digital boards. And so when I first left radio, I'm almost immediately, there was almost no transition. In fact, I think I was actually still an employee when I began doing webcasts. Podcasts were definitely already a thing. We were doing them in radio, but I began doing live streams, and the first iteration of that was the Micah Hanks program. I was doing a, you know, a radio format show. So actually, that was the first name that I used, but then I'd been a part of one of these little networks, and I actually ended up leaving that network, and I thought that it would be apropos at the time not to use the same name for a little while, and I was doing the Grailian Report blog, and so I decided to do a separate, entirely separate podcast with the name for the Grailian Report, always with the intention of bringing back the Micah Hanks program. That actually happened at one point. The show actually was airing on KGRA Radio. We were doing that, and we were also featuring the Grailian podcasts on the network, and eventually I decided it's time to go back to the original name, consolidate. I'd never expected the Grailian podcast would end up taking off and becoming the main show I would end up doing for years and years, and it did. It was really kind of a strange homecoming. And so with the new old iteration of the show with the new name, you know, one of the things I wanted to try and do was, as we are seeing SpaceX, as we are seeing Blue Origin, as we are now, of course, you know, getting our Space Force into order and eventually off the ground, you know, this is going to be an exciting time and maybe on par with the great space race that we saw begin in the 1960s. I'm really looking at some of the developments both in government but also in especially private industry. Our aspirations, Elon Musk wanting to take us to Mars, you know, Jeff Bezos and Blue Origin, you know, and what they're doing and the competitive nature of these separate civilian space programs and how increasingly over time we're seeing NASA outsource to them. And let's not forget about Bob Bigelow, you know, which ties it all back in with ufology. Bigelow Advanced Aerospace Studies, NASA has outsourced to Bigelow over the years, but we now know, of course, with the military's interest in UFOs and the Pentagon program, that Bigelow was instrumental in all of that with the ATIP program and its predecessor, the ALSAP program. So with all of these things that are changing right now and new things coming to light and how the commercial space industry is so much a part of that. I really am shifting my focus more in that direction, and I think it's really going to be setting a precedent for the technologies that we're going to be seeing over the next couple of decades. This is going to be the path to a future that's going to be unlike any world we know right now. In fact, we may be going more and more increasingly with time off-world.
Well, yeah, okay. So there was a lot to cover there, but I think you're absolutely right. And the more that humanity tends to reach out and into space and explore space, the more logical it seems to be that whatever these alien craft are that are visiting our world, that they are probably just something that's been doing the same thing but started before us. Interstellar travel doesn't seem to be quite as fantastic. I mean, now they've discovered, well, they've known about it for a while, but there's a planet around our nearest star, Proxima Centauri B. That's only 4.2 light years. So even at less than half the speed of light, it's well within a human lifespan to get there and even back.
Yes, if the technology exists. If, again, and that's a big if, this is one reason I think it's important to be studying UFOs. You know, I do not espouse an extraterrestrial hypothesis in relation to that. I acknowledge it as being a likelihood according to some information, but I mean, I'm always open to other interpretations. And when I say a likelihood, a lot of people are like, oh, come on, give me a break. You know, the more skeptically inclined, I know my old pal Robert Schaefer would probably roll his eyes if you heard me say that. But I wonder if all of the dynamics of the phenomena from over the years can be accounted for in terms of just our secret government technologies. And again, this is one reason why I'm always asking people to please review the history of the phenomenon. You know, Barry Greenwood, in his fantastic newsletter from years ago, the UFO Historical Review, I think it was the very first issue, he features a account from maybe around 1941 or 1943, but it was a pilot out there flying around the coast of California, and he sees this object come up from the left, and he looks over to observe this, and this thing kind of dips down and then kind of flies out off of his wing, very much either like a flying saucer or kind of like one of these weird swept-wing aircraft, but with, again, flight characteristics and appearance and dynamics that are just different from any kind of known aircraft. And when it took off at the end, he said it already had a sort of an orange glow around it, but that when this thing took off, he said that the back end wobbled a little bit, and then it just took off, and it increased in brightness and became brighter as it flew off toward the horizon at incredible speed. If we had that kind of technology, why are we testing that in U.S. airspace in the middle of the greatest conflict of the last century? Why wasn't that ever used during the conflict or in subsequent operations, military operations that have been carried out over the years thereafter? Why in the world would that kind of technology not have been disclosed after more than half a century?
We're raising the question of the ages, and we'll have the break of the ages, and we'll figure it out. More to come with Gene Randall and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
This is Fred.
Hi, I'm Fred.
Fred's a repeater.
I tend to repeat.
Fred has a business.
I do have a business.
And a problem. Fred repeats the same tired advertising over and over, and now it doesn't work.
Over and over.
But Fred is about to see a vision.
I'm seeing a vision.
Advertising on the Genesis Communications Network is the smart way for Fred to reach his potential customers with the most affordable national advertising rates, period. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just email advertise@GCNlive.com.
We all have heard about the benefits of fish oils, but what about the presence of heavy metals, PCBs, dioxins, furans, and other contaminants found in fatty tissues of fish? GCNteam.com recognizes this risk and offers IFOS certified tested omega-3 fatty acids. EPA, DHA insist on IFOS omega-3 fatty acid certification. Get the best at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Congressional lawmakers have left Capitol Hill for the remainder of the August recess without a deal for the next COVID-19 relief package, which is expected to send another stimulus payment to most Americans. The House and Senate are now both on recess. House Democratic leaders and negotiators from the White House have worked this month to find a deal on another relief bill. Both chambers have crafted relief aid, but the two sides remain far apart on certain provisions. Unless negotiators reach an agreement, lawmakers will not return to Capitol Hill until September. The House is scheduled to return September 14th, and the Senate the second week of the month. Adding to the uncertainty are both parties' national nominating conventions, which will be held over the next 2 weeks. The Democrats will stage theirs next week, and the Republicans a week later. This is USA Radio News. The U.S. Postal Service sent dozens of states letters saying that some mail-in ballots may not be counted in time for the November election. It's a warning that further complicates the role of the USPS in the voting process. The Washington Post was the first to report that Thomas Marshall, General Counsel and Executive Vice President for the U.S. Postal Service, sent letters to 46 states and Washington, D.C. He told the states some ballots may not arrive in time to be counted. Los Angeles area officials lifted some evacuation orders as firefighters battled a 17,000-acre blaze amid what could be a record-breaking heat wave in Southern California. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection said the blaze, which started Wednesday, was only 12% contained. The fire was situated near Lake Hughes, an unincorporated community in Los Angeles County. So far, the wildfire has destroyed at least 21 structures. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-900-8407. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-900-8407. That's 1-800-900-8407. 1-800-900-8407.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, Micah Hanks joining us. Questions being asked. Randall, you were about to say something before I had to stop for the pause that refreshed.
Well, just going back to what you were saying, Micah, that the question, the answer to that question is, you know, why wouldn't we have been using the kind of technology that has been observed by now? And I think you're absolutely right, especially when we're talking about, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s technology. If they had it back then, by now we'd know about it. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I also don't think it's reasonable to think that the kind of technology that was observed, or at least the type of craft that were observed, if they were craft, there seems to be every reason to think that they were craft. I mean, when we look at the Twining memo, they were being tracked on radar. They were being chased by jets. They were being seen in the daylight with radar visual observations. These were saucer-like craft that could outperform and outrun anything that they had at the time. Why would they be even chasing them then? It doesn't make any sense at all. To date, I don't know of any kind of craft or technology that we would have that can instantly change direction, instantly accelerate off at the rate that these things have been reported to perform at. It just doesn't add up to me at all.
It makes no sense, Randall. It makes no sense at all. Again, people look at, for instance, the recent Navy films that were acknowledged by the Pentagon after they were reportedly released through unauthorized channels. That, again, is the official Pentagon narrative. Those videos, they appear to show something that the Pentagon says it can't identify. UFO skeptic Mick West, and again, you know, just like Bob Schaefer and a lot of other people who are more skeptically inclined as commentators, I appreciate, I value their perspectives on things. Bob Schaefer and I talking a few years ago had said exactly what you just said right there, Randall. There's no way if these things belong to us, they wouldn't have been disclosed to the public after all this time. So we absolutely share some perspectives on things. On the other hand, I know that Mick West has continued to say that the object in the video that is related to the Nimitz incident, again, not filmed by pilot Commander Dave Fravor, but filmed by pilot Chad Underwood, this object very well could have just been a 747 off in the distance. Now, initially, Mick had said that that was the case, but that the aircraft was probably much further in the distance. We now know it was within about 20 miles away, I think actually closer to 19. Mick concedes that, but he nonetheless says that at that distance and with the low-resolution footage that was being employed by the Raytheon Aptly forward-targeting pod, we might still account to this as being a distant commercial airliner. To which I say, why in the world, then, would there not have been a discernible transponder? And if there was a 747 flying with no transponder in that airspace with these military operations being carried out, a training operation off the California coast, that would have been a real problem. It would have been a real problem for a 747 flying with its transponder turned off in the first place. We have to be able to account for all of the aspects of that incident. What did Commander Fravor say that he saw? Chad Underwood believes he filmed the same thing, and certain characteristics of what we see in the Aptlyr footage, short though it is, edited though it was, as far as we know, that seems to add up to there being at least something unknown, and even the Pentagon says that that's the case. Now, great, they just released this. Maybe it was something that, you know, our boys from Area 51 were playing with. But that seems less likely to me. If we look all the way back to the 1960s, we had the Vietnam conflict. A lot of people don't know that there were two secret UFO projects that were carried out there during that time. They were called Have Fear and Lethal Chaser. I believe they occurred in August of 1967. They included laser, night vision, and a number of other different kinds of instrumental arrays that were used to try and target objects that were flying over the controlled airspace there. And they were described as being egg or ellipsoid-shaped objects that gave off a blue glow. They sounded very much like the sort of quote-unquote tic-tac that Dave Fravor said that he saw. Go a few years before that, Lonnie Zamora, in the Socorro, New Mexico incident, he described an aircraft that was, in a lot of ways, very similar to the description that Fravor gave of the so-called tic-tac. I even found a report from the middle to late 1940s at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where a couple of drivers going along a road at night near the Oak Ridge Laboratory, encountered a large, again, I think they described it as being cigar-shaped. They said it was kind of an off-white color with rounded edges. It was hovering over the highway in front of them. As they stopped, they got out of the car, they watched it. It was a good distance away. As they began to drive toward it, it kind of moved away and then eventually left, but it very much was a description of a similar kind of an object. Did we have that technology in the 1940s? I mean, did we have this kind of technology during the Second World War when there were pilots over both the Pacific Theater and also over Europe, Axis and Ally pilots, mind you, who were saying that they were seeing strange lights that would follow them? And yeah, sure, maybe some of these were lightning sprites, ball lightning, natural or geophysical phenomena. But there's also, and this is quite interesting, especially from the Pacific Theater, instances where pilots said that they were followed by aircraft that in one flight, and this is a really interesting one that you never hear about, they flew from night into early morning, and as the daylight begun to strike the light that had been following them a distance away, the so-called Foo Fighter, they actually saw daylight reflecting off of it. It seemed to have a metallic sheen. As far as I know, ball lightning doesn't do that. It seemed to be some kind of an actual tangible craft that was flying a good distance away from them, but kind of trailing them, and it really kind of made the pilots uneasy. Even during the Second World War, you hear reports of very unusual things that seem to imply a kind of technology. It's not impossible that it's of earthly origin. Upon historical review, you begin to see how difficult it is to reconcile that with the old, oh, these are just ours, and it's just our boys at Area 51 playing with something. That's really not as easy and clear-cut an argument as many people think it is.
You're one of the guys that's done his homework on this, and it's just not ours. It can't be. At least not all of it. Sure, there's a lot that is probably a misidentification or a misinterpretation. There might even be fabrications out there, but not all of it is. There's that residual number that just cannot be explained by our technology. It's not from around here, Micah. Hey, have you ever seen one yourself? Have we ever asked you that? Have you had a UFO experience of your own?
I don't really think I've seen a UFO per se. I have had some observations of what may have been some anomalous lights down at Brown Mountain, North Carolina, which, Gene, you visited there one time, I believe, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. It was back to the mid-1960s. It was the late 1960s. It was me in Geneva and Alan Greenfield.
Yep.
And I wrote an article about it for our magazine, Caveat Emptor. And what I remember is we were going up a dirt road to Weissman's View at the top of the mountain. And we looked across and we saw some lights. And the people there said, wow, here it is. It's just a plane.
Yeah, I've had that experience too, Gene, right there at Weissman's View. There have been a couple of instances where I've seen what, again, might have been lights. I was there with David Weatherly, you know, just last fall before the weird pandemic hit and changed the entire world. And it was pretty chilly, but David and I rode up there together, and, you know, we stood there, and we did see little kind of flickerings of light, and it's funny because, you know, I'm always a little more skeptically inclined. So again, I will continue to argue that there's a much broader history. I don't know that we can extend that back to antiquity, but when I talk about researchers having done that and arguing the fact that there seems to be a history that goes back much further into history, maybe not deep history, but certainly at least as far as historic record goes, what we have to, I think, recognize is there should be a distinction between the modern UFO phenomena and the apparent technological presence that we can detect, and which, again, our own new technologies, you know, as of the Second World War at least, radar primarily. Nowadays, the corollary for that being, again, infrared or targeting pods, tracking capabilities like the Raytheon Company's stuff. Again, it's quite obvious that with technology that's more capable of discerning a tangible presence, and we're not relying on just whether or not our eyes are really seeing what we're seeing, again, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, that's obviously not good enough, but that's the best that we had prior to the 1940s with the Second World War. So it's very possible that pre-World War observations of anomalous aerial phenomena, the likes of which were written by Charles Fort, may have been similar to the kinds of things that we've seen post-World War, but we didn't have the kind of instrumental capability of, you know, tracking and observing those things. But again, the other side of that coin is we have to recognize that there is a long-held tradition of humans seeing things they didn't understand in the skies and projecting religious beliefs or ascribing agency to that.
Come work out with Micah Hanks and Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that.
by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Introducing Reveal from GCNLife.com. Beverly Hills dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman invented Reveal, which contains polypeptides with natural botanicals and no parabens, sulfates, silicones, or dyes for a salon-quality hair growth product, Reveal. Here's Dr. Newman.
I have treated a lot of patients who lose their hair and they lose their confidence. We've created a unique set of polypeptides, which we call HPT6. The HPT6 contains the polypeptides from six different plants. The scalp infusion treatment should be used on wet or dry scalp. The Reveal hair care system is designed to be used for men and women alike.
Get Reveal at GCNLife.com with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So try Reveal today at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637. Plus a discount up to 25% off for Reveal at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
This is Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Should remind our listeners that we have the Paracast Plus, which is the enhanced version of this show, free of the network ads, plus the After the Paracast podcast, and Micah will be back for that one. He'll be right back. In the meantime, several more segments of this episode of the Paracast. We're exploring a lot of things we haven't talked to him about, because it's been several years, so we're playing catch-up. And there was something that you had mentioned in one of your radio shows, and you used the word pentacle. Anatomy of a cover-up. Tell us more.
Yeah, this is a reference to the infamous Pentacle Memorandum. A lot of people probably haven't heard of this. It's pretty well known to those who have read Jacques Vallée's writings over the years. And it's a rather controversial and problematic document. And the story of the Pentacle Memorandum really kind of goes like this. Back in 1967, Jacques Vallée, I think he was still in his 20s, he had published a fantastic book on the subject by that time called Anatomy of a Phenomenon. No, he published two books, I think. I think Challenge to Science also may have been out at this point. He'd published a couple of books, and he was working kind of in an assistant's position under J. Allen Hynek, who at that time was an official advisor on UFOs to the U.S. Air Force. And we had the University of Colorado project funded by the Air Force that was currently underway. Well, J. Allen Hynek was also hitting the lecture circuit, and he was quite a popular speaker at that time. I think actually in part because Frank Edwards, the author who had written the book Behind the Flying Saucers, right? He, I believe, had just passed away, if memory serves, and his publicist had been looking for someone to fill those spots on the lecture circuit where he wouldn't be able to fulfill them, obviously.
Stop the presses before we get back to Pentacle.
Yeah.
Got this from CNN. Okay. This is not fake news, CNN. This is CNN, the real thing, which is owned by AT&T, which owns Time Warner Media. Seriously, Pentagon to launch task force to investigate UFO sightings. The Pentagon is forming a new task force to investigate UFOs that have been observed by U.S. military aircraft, according to two defense officials. I'll read one more paragraph. I'm just hearing this myself, folks. Yeah. Deputy Secretary of Defense David Norquist will help oversee the task force, which is expected to be officially unveiled in the next few days, according to the officials. Previous efforts to look at what the Pentagon dubs unidentified aerial phenomena were led by the U.S. Navy, as many of the documented encounters involved their aircraft. The Department of Defense did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Now, before we go back to Pentacope, I'm just going to raise one quick question here because I'm just learning about it. And my associates here have probably not seen the article. Is this intended to be the beginnings of an October surprise from the Trump administration?
Good question. And I hadn't seen that yet, too, although I see it's linked on some of the big news sites. We have been hearing about this, and we'll get back to the Pentacle, but let's talk briefly about the Pentagon since that's breaking news. There had been questions. Again, Pentagon spokeswoman Susan Goh has been asked several times about whether the UAP task force exists or whether it was going to be something forthcoming. And there have been sort of conflicting statements. Again, the Senate intelligence briefing seemed to describe this as being, and thank you for the links there, it seems to have been a reference to something that existed. But she worded it had made it sound like it didn't exist yet. So if I'm reading this article correctly from CNN, it seems to imply that they are formulating it with Norquist apparently heading this up, and they're going to be officially unveiling it in the coming days. So I actually get the impression maybe it didn't exist, although there had also been some conjectures that the UAP task force that's described in the CNN article here and the current existing ATIP program, but under a different name, were one and the same. The ATIP program that was disclosed by the New York Times back in 2017 apparently still exists, but it's under a different name and, of course, under different leadership since Luis Elizondo has, of course, officially left the program as of 2017 in October of that year. I've spoken off the record a couple of times with Lou, and I have gotten to know him pretty well. I'll just tell you this. My personal perspective of Lou Elizondo is that he's a really good guy. And he takes this subject extremely seriously. You know, you couldn't ask for, in my opinion, a government official, a former government official, who is more straight shooting, but who is more sincere in his interest in trying to communicate to the public about this issue. And, you know, I know a lot of people have compared him, I think, to guys like Richard Doty and said, you know, how do we know that he's not just another information agent? To that I ask, well, what kind of information has he supplied? Where's the MJ-12 documents? You know, where's the file cash that was shown to Linda Moulton Howe? You know, where are all of the documents, or what other kind of data has he presented that seems to be questionable or which appears to be steering the narrative? He has only essentially commented on, for instance, the videos that the Pentagon has already released, and of course has participated in made-for-television investigations into those things, apart from work he actually did with the government. You know, he seems to me to be a very sincere individual, and I don't see, compared with past instances, a whole lot of information being provided that would be of questionable nature. Quite the opposite with him, which makes, I think, it a very different story.
But I wanted to mention one more thing here. In the article, they quote the current chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Uh-huh.
And I'll give you this single sentence. Frankly, if it's something from outside this planet, that might actually be better than the fact that we've seen some sort of technological leap on behalf of the Chinese or the Russians or some other adversary. Parse that sentence. You know, it's more dangerous if it's terrestrial because it means that other countries have advanced aircraft. But if it's the ET, well, that may be okay.
Well, we could break that down a little, too. Again, that was actually in a statement that he had given to a Florida-based journalist a couple of months ago back. Well, maybe more like a month and a half ago. But anyway, unless he gave the same statement to CNN, he has said that before.
That's quoted from a radio station interview. Okay, that's from WFOR-TV in July. So, yes, it is something that's already been mentioned. But they mention it here as background because it shows, number one, Rubio is being very serious. This is a time when we have extreme politics going on in this country. A lot of nonsense coming out. And now we have this in the middle of it, which means, of course, it will be overlooked. We're busy with the pandemic. We're busy with renewed controversies over absentee voting, which is the same as mail-in voting, though they try to pretend it's something else. All this stuff going on that consumes the headlines, and they throw this in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So it goes under the radar.
Literally. Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate because, you know, again, Marco Rubio, yet again, a guy I have to kind of, you know, give kudos to because he seems to take this very seriously. I don't doubt he received briefings from Lou Elizondo because he said that he's been receiving intelligence on this for the better part of a decade in the same interview we were just talking about. Again, he says it might be better if these things are from someplace else because Therefore, that would mean it's not China or Russia invading our airspace. The good news is, if they are not Chinese or Russian technology, and again, based on what intelligence has been made available publicly, and I keep tabs on this almost on a daily, literally on a daily basis. Let's go, just go ahead and say it. I mean, this is literally my life. I study this stuff tremendously. There's no evidence to my knowledge that's existent in the public domain that indicates in any credible fashion that there's any link to China or Russia. Now, Russia does have aspirations, and allegedly they actually are working on some hypersonic weapons. Putin's always talking about things like that. But guys, are they going to be able to go Mach 12 and take sharp right-angle turns? You know, are they going to be able to outfox our best Navy fighter aircraft? I mean, seriously, I don't think that Russia has something comparable to the kinds of things that we are seeing described by our own pilots here stateside.
The thing we should mention, too, Micah, is that if the Russians had anything like this, they'd be boasting about it. Look at this coronavirus vaccine that they're talking about now. Hasn't even entered phase three trials, which is very important. Because you want to know, number one, it's effective. Very important, it's effective. Number two, the side effects are not serious. I mean, the side effects might be like you get a flu vaccine. You literally get a very, very mild case of the flu. That's one thing. And probably nothing to worry about. But if they're making this boast now, if they had advanced technology, they'd be talking about the Chinese, ditto. If they had advanced technology, fine. I don't dismiss the possibility that over the years there have been sightings that involve military test aircraft, but this is getting extreme. And again, I don't even agree with a lot of the things that Senator Rubio says about a lot of things, like preserving Medicare and preserving Social Security. He said some very questionable things about that. But that doesn't mean he's dishonest. And knowing the politics, he wouldn't say something front and center and positive about serious UFO investigations.
Very good point.
Unless he really legitimately felt there was something going on. Otherwise, there's no political advantage. None whatever. Micah Hanks, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items. And entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's N-U-T-R-I Medical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.